Luke chapter 23. As I probably mention on every occasion, I'm not a professional, so you get what you pay for. But we'll try and get through this lesson. The setting for Luke chapter 23 is Jesus is handed over to Pilate. Let's begin reading in verse 1. Then the whole multitude of them arose and led him to Pilate. And they begin to accuse him, saying, "We found this fellow perverting the nation and forbidding to pay taxes to Caesar, saying that he himself is Christ, a king." We know this is a lie right off the bat, because when they tried to trap him with, "Is it lawful to pay taxes or not?" he asked for a coin and said, "Whose picture is this?" And they said, "Caesar's." And Jesus taught them, "Render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's." So we know this is a direct lie. Let's continue in verse 3. Then Pilate asked him, saying, "Are you the king of the Jews?" He answered him and said, "It is as you say." So Pilate said to the chief priests and the crowd, "I find no fault in this man." Pilate tried to release Jesus at this time. He was trying to make at least an immediate problem go away, or maybe he was just trying to clear his conscience. But Pilate tries here to release him. In verse 5, "But they were the more fierce, saying, 'He stirs up the people, teaching throughout all Judea, beginning from Galilee to this place.'" When Pilate heard of Galilee, he asked if the man were a Galilean. And as soon as he knew that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who was also in Jerusalem at that time. He wasn't going to have an easy fix for this. So now Pilate tries to hand it off to someone else, and he sends him to Herod. Verse 8. "Now when Herod saw Jesus, he was exceedingly glad." We would think seeing Jesus and excited to see Jesus would be a good thing, but Herod has the wrong reasons why he was glad to see Jesus. Let's continue in verse 8. "For he had desired a long time to see him, because he had heard many things about him and hoped to see some miracle done by him." Herod was looking for the wrong thing from Jesus. Many people are in congregations today all over the world and in our nation, this town, for the same reason Herod wanted to see Jesus. They're looking for entertainment. Jesus is not something to entertain us. And if you're looking for entertainment today, you're probably sadly going to be disappointed, because I'm not very entertaining. You ever hear someone say to you, I just don't get anything out of church"? Maybe that's because you're looking for the wrong thing out of it. Verse 9. "Then he questioned him with many words, but he answered him nothing. And the chief priests and scribes vehemently accused him." Now Herod hasn't been entertained. Herod's a leader. He is used to having what he wants. And he probably took Jesus, like it says, because he wanted to see a miracle. He hadn't seen a miracle. He's not even answering him. You can imagine Herod gets, I guess, pretty worked up. Verse 11, "Then Herod and his men of war treated him with contempt and mocked him." The leader, who is supposed to be impartial, not prejudiced in any manner, now is basically turned into a bully with his men of war. Now he's trying to intimidate Jesus. Verse 11 continues, "Arrayed him in a gorgeous robe and sent him back to Pilate." Herod didn't get what he wanted, so he's done. He's done with Jesus. "Go back where you came from. I wanted something and you didn't supply that." Verse 12. "That very day, Pilate and Herod became friends with each other, for previously they had been at enmity with one another. Now the king who was looking for entertainment and the leader that was wanting to release Jesus, now they have something in common. And now Jesus is being used as a political tool, a political stepping stone, and something that binds them together, that makes them have something in common. Verse 13. Then Pilate, when he had called the chief priests, the rulers, and the people, said to them, "You have brought this man to me as one who misleads the people." We see that the peer pressure from all of his constituents that are under his authority is building. He's got a problem. It won't go away. He's tried to make it go away. It's come back and is in his lap. Verse 13, "And indeed, having examined him in your presence, I have found no fault in this man concerning those things of which you accuse him." Or verse 15 now. "No, neither did Herod, for I sent you back to him. And indeed, nothing deserving of death has been done by him. I will therefore chastise him and release him. For it was necessary for him to release one of them at the feast." It was their custom that a prisoner could be released during Passover. And it was that time. It's what they were getting ready for. That's why the Pharisees were trying to rush this crucifixion, so they wouldn't mess up their feast. They wanted it done. Hurry. We got to get this over with. Pilate tried another way of releasing Jesus here. Have you ever been in a meeting of some sort and the whoever's the presiding over the meeting does something by general consent? Okay, this is a good idea. We've talked about it. So if there's no objections, we'll do this thing. And he tries to ease Jesus' release by more or less general consent, but the Jews will not have it. Something bothered Pilate about Jesus. I really think Pilate's conscience was injured and was hurt by this. He has said over and over, he has found nothing to condemn him for. But even though he sees a very great injustice being done here, he's not going to risk what he's got going on. Yeah, this isn't right, but you know, if I do this, they're going to have a big uprising. If I can't keep peace here, I'm not going to get to preside. I'm going to lose my job. That made it personal, beyond his conscience. Yeah, his conscience was gnawing at him, but if it gets into bothering his pocketbook, evidently that was a greater power to Pilate. He chose his career and even chose something worse here. We'll see that he chooses and allows a murderer and thief, a rebellious leader, one who was the leader of an insurrection against the powers that went on, that were in charge there at that time, and releases him back out of jail. Verse 18. "And they cried out at once, saying, 'Away with this man, and release to us Barabbas,' who had been thrown into prison for a certain rebellion made in the city and for murder. Pilate, therefore, wishing to release Jesus, again called out to them. But they shouted, saying, 'Crucify him, crucify him.' Then he said to them the third time, 'What? Why? What evil has he done? I have found no reason for death in him. I will therefore chastise him and let him go.'" He's still going to whip him. He's going to have him scourged and try and let that be enough punishment. Verse 23, "But they were insistent, demanding with loud voices that he be crucified. And the voices of these men and of the chief priests prevailed." So Pilate gave sentence that it should be as they requested. This isn't something that Pilate has an exclusive on. We all know people whose conscience bothered them on certain things. We know a lot of people. We have lots of friends who are honest, friendly people. They don't lie, they don't steal, they don't cheat, they're not murderers. That we may often refer to as good people. You know, that's something that Jesus would not even let himself be called good. Why call ye me good? There's only one that's good. I think we take a lot of liberties and we use a lot of vocabulary loosely that we ought to think about. We know people who have good consciences that bother them and trouble them. But they do like Pilate. They try to sweep it under the rug. Verse 25. And he released to them the one they requested, this murderer, the thief, the rebellious leader, Barabbas, for whom rebellion and murder had been thrown into prison, but he delivered Jesus to their will. John chapter 19 tells us a few different details than the other three Gospels about this occasion. John tells us that Pilate had already scourged him, and he tried to let that be enough. John tells us that the crown of thorns was placed on his head. And then they took the reed which they had handed him to ridicule him with and smote him on the head. You ever get a scratch on your somewhere on your head? It doesn't take much to really bleed, does it? They put the crown of thorns on and then drove it onto his head with a reed. We're told then in John chapter 19 that he started carrying his cross. He's carrying the very thing he is going to be killed by. I remember a few times, of course, my dad always had his belt with him when it was time to discipline, but I was told a few times, go get a belt by my mom. Have you ever been told that? Go get the paddle. Go get the belt. Go get the instrument of discipline. That's a long walk, isn't it? I can't find it. I remember my grandma, a switch was what she warned and threatened us with. And she cut it and she made a big to-do production about, this is a switch, and she put it right on top of the refrigerator. But then somehow she stayed distracted long enough that we lost the switch somehow. So she got mad enough to go back and get it. She had to go cut another one. And I don't know if Grandma did that on purpose or if she calmed down by the time she went and cut another switch. But if I ever got sent after the belt, it was because I deserved it. Jesus is carrying the thing that will put him to death, and he didn't deserve it. We did. He carried that cross because of the things we did. I don't think I ever knowingly, as my brother looks at me in the back, knowingly let one of my siblings be punished for something I did. I don't think, and I'm sure if I've forgotten something, he'll correct me, but Jesus did receive what we deserve. Verse 26 from Luke 23. Now as they led him away, they laid hold of a certain man, Simon a Cyrenian, who was coming from the country, and on him they laid the cross that he might bear it after Jesus. These aren't a contradiction. John gives a few different details. Can you imagine carrying a log of anything heavy on your back after you had just been scourged? I can't imagine. The times I got disciplined, I didn't want to sit down for a while, let alone something heavy on my back if I had been scourged. Verse 27, and the great multitude of the people followed him, and women who also mourned and lamented him. But Jesus, turning to them, said, daughters of Jerusalem, do not weep for me, but weep for yourselves and for your children. For indeed the days are coming in which they will say, blessed are the barren wombs that never bore and breasts which never nursed. Then they will begin to say to the mountains, fall on us, and to the hills, cover us. For if they do these things in the green wood, what will that be done in the dry? Jesus is facing his death. And he's thinking about other people. He's trying to warn them of the demise of Jerusalem. And we know that he told them, when you see the cloud coming, run. Don't go back to your home. And he said on another occasion, I would as a hen would draws her chicks under her wings. He knew how horrible the siege of Jerusalem was going to be. That they would resort to cannibalism. That's the things he's talking about here. He's facing his death and he's stopping to try and worry about other people. I have a hard time imagining that I would be strong enough to do that. Jesus gave us so many incredible examples. Verse 32. There were also two others, criminals, led with him to be put to death. And when they'd come to the place called Calvary, there they crucified him and the criminals, one on the right hand and the other on the left. Then Jesus said, Father, forgive them. They do not know what they do. He asks forgiveness for the very people who are killing him. It's unfathomable to me. Verse 34. Again, and they divided his garments and cast lots. And the people stood looking on, but even the rulers with them sneered, saying, he saved others. Let him save himself if he is the Christ. Who does this sound like? Who said, if you're the Son of God? It's what Satan said when he tempted Jesus after he was fasting 40 days. Well, if you're really the Son of God, just make these rocks into bread. These leaders are using the same words, some of the same words that Satan did. Verse 36, the soldiers also mocked him, coming and offering him sour wine and saying, if you are the king of the Jews, save yourself. And an inscription also was written over him in letters of Greek, Latin, and Hebrew. This is the king of the Jews. John 19 also tells us this was written by Pilate. He wrote this himself. The Jews came to him and actually protested that this was even on there and said, well, you need to say that he said he was the king of the Jews. Pilate defended and he said, I have written what I have written. Verse 39. Then one of the criminals who were hanged blasphemed him, saying, if you're the Christ, save yourself and us. He's jumping on the bandwagon too. If. But the other answering rebuked him, saying, do you not even fear God, seeing you are under the same condemnation? And we indeed justly, for we receive the due reward of our deeds. But this man has done nothing wrong. Then he said to Jesus, Lord, remember me when you come into your kingdom. Jesus said to him, assuredly, I say to you, today you will be with me in paradise. the thief is the first one today in this, in all these people he's come in contact with, other than the women and the people following him, who has admitted the truth. Pilate admitted it, but he didn't act on it. Verse 44. Now it was about the sixth hour, and there was darkness over all the earth until the ninth hour. For 3 hours, it was dark in the middle of the day. What kind of a feeling would that give you? How would that set on you? What would your countenance be? Verse 45. Then the sun was darkened, and the veil of the temple was torn in two. And when Jesus had cried out with a loud voice, he said, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." Having said this, he breathed his last. So when the centurion saw what had happened, he glorified God, saying, "Certainly this was a righteous man." The centurion was in charge of 100 soldiers, the very ones who were chastising him, who had beaten him. Their leader recognized what happened. And the whole crowd who came together to the sight, seeing what had done, beat their breasts and returned. But all his acquaintances and the women who followed him from Galilee stood at a distance watching these things. Verse 50. Now behold, there was a man named Joseph, a council member, a good and just man. He had not consented to their decision indeed. He was from Arimathea, a city of the Jews, who himself was also waiting for the kingdom of God. You know how I remember the difference in the Pharisees and the Sadducees? The Sadducees didn't look for a kingdom. They didn't look for a Savior, and that's sad, you see. Joseph was a Pharisee. He was looking for the Savior. He was looking for the kingdom to be established. This man, in verse 52, this man went to Pilate and asked for the body of Jesus. Joseph chose the truth. John 19 and 39 tells us also another man named Nicodemus came and helped him. Remember Nicodemus? Nicodemus was also a Pharisee. He was on the Sanhedrin council with Joseph, if I'm not mistaken. They had high places among the Jews, and they risked everything. Why was it they were rushing to crucify Jesus? The Passover, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, was right here. We've got to get this done so we can have our feast. They weren't going to be able to do this because if you came in contact with a dead body, you were unclean according to the law of Moses for a period of time. They were going to be unclean and not able to take their feast. Joseph and Nicodemus came, verse 53, then he took it down, Jesus' body, wrapped it in linen and laid it in a tomb that was hewn out of the rock where no one had ever laid before. That day was the preparation and the Sabbath drew near. Joseph was a rich man. Tombs, catacombs, they were reused. After a while, that no one had been buried here. And of course, that fulfilled prophecy also. Joseph, Nicodemus, and even the thief recognized truth. Pilate, Herod, the chief priests, and the Jews wanted something, and they chose the wrong things. We all have the same choices. We all have the same choices and opportunities. God is grateful and gives us a lot of time to do the right thing. People want something. They want truth or they want something else. We need to choose truth. Can you imagine how heavy the cross was? I want you to imagine something else. We didn't put the nails in Jesus' hands. We weren't the ones who drove them in, but it was because of us. It was because of all of mankind's sin that He had to come and die. Joseph and Nicodemus had to pull them out. That's a sobering, sobering thought to me. It says they brought over 100 pounds of spices, Nicodemus did. They wrapped his body in linen with the spices and buried him in the tomb. We're running short on time, so we'll close. But we need to ask ourselves a question. Do we want truth or do we want something else? Do we want entertainment or do we want salvation? Do we want eternity? We'll read the last verses and we'll close. Verse 55, "And the women who had come with him from Galilee followed after, and they observed the tomb and how the body was laid. Then they returned and prepared spices and fragrant oils, and they rested on the Sabbath according to the commandment." There's been a lot of people in this context that came in contact, that came and watched Jesus die. And it says that they all beat their chest and walked away. They knew they had made a mistake. But luckily for them, they still had time to do something about it. They couldn't undo the death of Jesus, that they had killed God's Son, a holy and perfect man, a good man. But they still had time. Right now, we do too. We need to choose truth. We need to choose to live in eternity with heaven. We can be made joint heirs of everything that Jesus has in heaven. We need to think on this. Let's remember this as we finish, conclude, and continue our worship today. If you're subject to the invitation, and you need the prayers or need to obey the gospel, please come as we stand and sing.